Do you have question about what we discussed on Friday? Because I went a bit fast at the end. No? Perfect. So today I finished to discuss a few aspects of renormalization from the point of view of perturbation theory. Then I'll discuss the renormalization view from the point of view of renormalization by integrating over the high momentum, high energy, or small wavelength modes in a quantum field theory, which is a point of view that which was introduced by Wilson and other physicists for condensed matter and statistical mechanics purpose, but which is also very useful. In fact, it's another way to look at the same aspects of renormalization theory in quantum field theory. So then you'll see again aspects of renormalization you have discussed in the statistical mechanical course. So first, perturbative, let's say. Perturbative renormalization. So I'm viewing that from the point of view of quantum field theory in space-time. And I want to discuss two aspects. So we have seen that, in fact, the fact that there are ultraviolet singularities, for instance, in phi 4 and d=4, for instance, implies that, in fact, in order to construct a theory which makes sense, you have to use this procedure of renormalization, and which means it implies that the short distance properties of the theory are not the naive one. This implies that there is a better function. Which can be, in fact, understood from the point as the fact that the scale invariance, the scale or dilatation invariance of the theory is anomalous. So that's a classical invariance, but quantum effects, quantization, break this. You have no way to make a consistent quantum theory which is scale invariant for this theory, which is an important aspect. So what I want to discuss here briefly is just the concept, which I think I already probably mentioned that, the term of when is a theory renormalizable or not renormalizable. So when does the renormalization program works? And the second aspect that I will allude very briefly is the relation of renormalization with something we discussed very briefly when we were discussing the free field, which is the concept of operator product expansion, namely the concept of what's happening when you take local products of operators in quantum field theory. All those aspects are different way to view the same mathematical structure. Okay, so first, we have seen what does it mean for a theory which is renormalizable? So let's go back to phi 4. So we have seen that the theory phi 4, which is given by this action, 1/2 d mu phi squared plus g over 4 phi to the 4. So I'm considering the action in d dimension, so this is a d dimensional space. We have seen that in 4 dimensions, the theory is scale invariant, which means that when you make a dilation on the distance, it can be reabsorbed into a change in the normalization of the field so that the action doesn't change. And this works because in 4 dimensions, the coupling constant is dimensionless. So if you analyze the dimensions of the the value z of Ox as a dimension of a length. So x, the dimension of x, well, is something like a length. Let's write it like that. X is an object which is a bracket of length. So it has a dimension of a length. Therefore, phi, the field phi, must have a dimension of a length to the power 2 minus d over 2, so that the action is dimensionless. And then g, the coupling constant, must have the dimension of length to the power, so phi as a dimension, so phi 4 as a dimension 4 minus 2d. So g must have a dimension d minus 4, if I'm not mistaken. That is 2d. And so you see that if the dimension is 4, g is dimensionless. So let's call this the dimension of g. Dimension g. Delta g is equal to 0. But if the dimension of space is less than 4, for instance, if it's 3 or 2, well, you can define as quantum theory, in perturbation theory, the dimension is negative. Delta g is negative. And if the dimension of space is larger than 2, 4, for instance, 5 or 6, delta g is positive. And this change of dimension has important consequences of the nature of the ultraviolet divergence of the theory. Because remember, in d equal 4, this diagram was logarithmically divergent. And that's the only diagram which was important in phi to the 4, in the phi to the 4 theory. Because we consider massless, so we assume that you have no problem with the mass, the two-point function. Okay. While here, so this gives a log of the cutoff. In dimension less than 1, this one is finite. So you have no real need of renormalization from the point of view of dealing with the ultraviolet divergence. You have an effective coupling constant, which is going to be different from the bare coupling constant because you have radiative corrections, quantum corrections, but it's finite. And here, this behaves like lambda to some power which is higher than positive constant. Because if you compute how this diagram behaves, it behaves like an integral over the momenta of twice the internal momenta. So it diverges like d minus 4, which is positive. So it's very divergent. And if you think about the next diagram, like this one, it's diverged like lambda to the power d minus 6. So you see that, for instance, when d equals 6, this is divergent. And this will go on. So it means that in this case, if the dimension is larger than 4, you have to introduce new counterterm associated to new operators. So this gives a new counterterm, which is going to be proportional to, so it will be a lambda d minus 6 times an operator phi to the 6 in the action. And this goes on when you go to higher order in perturbation theory. So basically, in d equal 4, you only need only counterterm for phi to the 4. And in fact, for d phi squared and phi 2, if you work out higher order in perturbation theory and consider the mass, then the theory is said to be renormalizable. Namely, if you start from the action, you need only to introduce counterterm associated to the original term in the action, maybe one. Here, the theory is said to be super normalizable because you don't need to introduce counter term except no counter term, but a few 4 phi squared. And here, the theory is non-renormalizable because you need an infinite number of new counter terms associated to new operators. You see? So if you start from a 5-4 theory, you need to introduce phi 6 theory, but then you discover that you have to introduce phi 8 theory, phi 10 theory, and you also some higher derivative operators, some operators involving higher derivative in the field, and the things blows up. You have no control of what you are doing, no control. So you have non-renormalizable theory, renormalizable theory, and super-renormalizable theory, and all amounts to the dimension of the interaction term. Yes?
For the non-renormalizable theory, say D was 7, so you'd get that phi 6 there.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't get a, like, I mean, presumably the next one would be phi 8 or something.
Huh?
Presumably the next term would be phi 8.
Yes.
But, like, would you need that counter term if D was less than 8?
Not directly. No, I think you need it. Because, for instance, this diagram, for instance, in a 5-4 theory, this is a diagram that, which is divergent, but you may think about, for instance, this diagram. No, it's a bad example. So I need a diagram with 8. Vertices, so it needs to have, of course. Well, in 8 dimension, this diagram is divergent, so it's divergent in 8 dimension. But then if you think about a 2-loop, let's imagine a diagram of 5-4, a 2-loop, which behave like that. Or maybe it's at 3 loop that we have to take into account. We need this. I just don't know the something like that. I think that this diagram, you discover that it's divergent in 6 dimension or something like that. So you can, you go. Okay, I'm not sure I give a clear answer, but anyway, you do the. We can discuss a bit later. We can work out the example and you'll see how it works. Okay. So keep in mind that a theory is non-renormalizable if the coupling constant has a positive dimension in terms of lengths. So a negative dimension in terms of energies. Or mass. And a famous example of a non-normalizable theory, well, there are 2 famous examples. I think I discussed a bit with some people after the lecture. There is first the Fermi theory for interaction between mesons. So it's an historical theory, but it's a theory where you had mesons and interaction between mesons. And of course, the most famous is the general relativity. Which is non-renormalizable. Hence all the problem and all the attempts and string theory and other theory which makes to quantize, to construct a quantum theory of gravity. Okay, so that's the first thing I wanted to discuss. The second one, I'm going to discuss that also a bit quickly, but the relation with what's called the operator product expansion. So we discussed just in the case of the free theory. In the case of the free theory, the free field, we have seen that if we consider two operators, phi of x and phi of y, consider as quantum operators, objects that you insert in quantum correlation, and you see what's going on when x goes to y at short distance, you expect to naively, in a classical theory, if those were just functions, classical functions, you would get just phi squared of x. Okay? But we have seen that this object requires renormalization, in fact, because you have to subtract the divergent term here inside this terms. Okay. So in fact, this is this renormalized phi squared theory. But then before that, there is a divergent term, which is x minus y to the power 2 minus d times the operator 1, the identity operator, which is a sensible, trivial, but a sensible operator acting on the field, so acting on the states in the Hilbert space. Okay, so this is the first example of a new term which comes from quantum effects. And this is those are the first term of what's called the operator product expansion. So now, in perturbation theory for the phi 4 theory, you compute expectation values of phi 4 operators. So you know the Feynman diagrams are way to in the phi 4 theory, perturbation theory involves the products of phi 4 of x 1. Phi 4 of x 2, etc. And you know, the Feynman diagrams are just a way to decompose these quantities, express them in terms of Feynman diagrams, and compute them. But the basic object are these, this expectation value of products of phi 4 operator, where phi 4 operator are operator in the free theory. And you may ask, is there an operator product expansion for the products of two phi 4 operators? Phi 4 of x, phi 4 of y, okay? And yes, there is one. And if you think about it, simply think about all the possible Feynman diagrams that can appear in the expansion of this. So you have other operators, and you have to apply Wieck theorem. And so you have to apply Wieck theorem. So some of the propagator in the Feynman diagram will join one phi here and one phi. So what are the possible pairings? If you have two phi 4 operators, so let me, this is a phi 4 hat x, this is the phi 4 of y, and there are some vertices in a big Feynman diagram, big class. Okay. So first you may have this. So you may have one propagator, and the other one are connected to other vertices. Then you may have two vertices. Okay? Then you may have three vertices. Etc. Okay. So now, if you think how those diagram contributes in an operator product expansion for this product operator, this is just the same propagator than here. So this is going the leading contribution, which is contribution of the propagators. It's going to be an x minus y to the power 2 minus d. Times What's happening when those two vertices become the same? You see? So when you get this, which is a phi 6 operator. Now, what is this diagram when these two come together? This is an x minus y to the power 4 minus 2d, because we have two propagators, times this, which is a phi 4 operator. And that's a phi squared operator. This gives a phi squared operator. So this will come out in normalization of the mass, but let's concentrate on this. This means that phi 4 of x, phi 4 of y, has a short distance operator product expansion. Okay? And well, in fact, we have also this one, where you have all the three, which is going to give the one operator. So the operator product expansion for phi 4 of x, phi 4 of x will contain a x minus y to the power 2 minus d times 4, it's this diagram, plus, so that's plus the identity, plus an x minus y to the power 2 minus d times 3 times the phi squared operator at x, plus x minus y 2 minus d times 2 times phi 4 operator, plus x minus y 2 minus d times phi 6 operator. And in fact, if you walk a little bit and consider what are the corrections when the points are closed, you are also going to get an x minus y the power 2 minus d times 2 d phi square operator of x, but I'm not discussed here. Okay? It comes from this one. And so you see that somewhere here, there is this dangerous term, which corresponds to this diagram and this term. You see? And it means that, remember, in the Feynman integrals, you have this, and you have to integrate over the position of the vertices, dx1 to dx2, etc. So somewhere in the sum of Feynman diagrams, you have a term which it is potentially dangerous, which happens, what's happening when you have an integral of a dx2 of something where you have phi 4 of x1, phi 4 of x2, and you have a potential divergence when x2 minus x1 is small, goes to zero. So somewhere in this big integral, when x2 becomes close to x1, you have a divergence. Because you have x1 minus x2 to the power 2, well, 4 minus 2d times dx2 in two dimensions. And this term gives a log of lambda, a log of the cutoff, a log of the minimal distance, if the dimension is 4. And it gives a power of lambda, so a divergence if the dimension is larger or equal to 4, and it's smooth, it's a nice term, if the dimension is less than 4. So and it's dangerous, so it's divergent if the dimension is larger or equal to 4. But you see that if you think of it in terms of an operator product expansion, in fact, in the integral, this term gives just a log of lambda times phi 4 of x1. The most singular term will come when you integrate over x2 is proportional to a local operator. So viewed from the point of view of an operator product expansion, the short distance divergences, like log lambda, are proportional to local operators. And that's a general argument. If you assume that there is a general operator product expansion structure for your quantum theory, you are ensured that the ultraviolet singularities are proportional to local operators. And that's why the explicit calculation shows that they can be, you know, controlled by counter, by local counterterms. Hence, local counterterms. And so when analyzing the short distance properties of a theory, you just have to use the fact that there is an operator product expansion and look at what are the operators which are dangerous or not, which amounts, of course, to precisely this dimensional analysis we did there. But here we do it at just at the level of the classical action, assuming that the strategy of renormalization introducing counterterm works. And the operator product expansion, which tell you that the short distance singularity properties of a quantum theory are still controlled by local operator, this you know, is a step further in the understanding of what's going on. Okay? So it's not, of course, a complete proof. Well, the theorem which ensures that everything works well rely on those properties. Okay, so hello. Good. And in a further course in high energy physics or in conformal field theory, and then therefore it's very useful for string theory, the operator product expansion is a really fundamental object. So you have to know that it exists. I just, you know, skimmed the superficial part of it. Okay. In particular, here, I have not computed what are the coefficients in front of those terms. But in order to compute the coefficient, you must do diagrammatics or other argument, but you can't escape explicit calculation. Okay. Okay. So now, let me go back to the second important aspect of renormalization, which is, let's call it so, usually called Wilsonian renormalization, which is how you consider, yes?
About the phi to the squared term.
Why? Which term do you want to consider?
The one that goes as x minus y to the 2 minus d times 3, because doesn't that also diverge as x minus y goes to 0?
This one?
Yeah.
Yes. You should, you are right. But if you think about it, what is this term? This term is associated to a diagram where you have 2 phi to the 4, and the two points come. No, it's. Oh, no, you mean this one or this one? Because this one is in d dimension. This one is less dangerous. No, this term is dangerous. So these terms come from this. It's a two-loop term.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So indeed, at two-loop, you must take into account this term. And it's one of the two-loop diagram, remember? in two loop, I draw the dangerous diagram. Well, there is this one and this one. So this one's come indeed from phi 4 times phi to the 4 gives a phi 2 and a phi 4. This one is, in fact, is 3 phi 4. Gives phi to the 4. Because you have 3 points, and that's when those 3 points come close together, then you get something which, where they contract into a single point. And, but of course, I have not mentioned that, but the operator product suspension, the structure exists also when you have more than two operators merging together. Because in fact, it generates an algebra of operators, so we can define products of local operators using the operator product expansion. And of course, since it's an algebra, it doesn't stop at products of two operators. And you can take products of operators, and it's an associative algebra. So, yes?
On the same note, what about the first term, the 5-6, the first diagram, or the 5-6?
The 5-6 term is not... is not the 5-6 term is not singular in two dimension when you integrate over it. So you don't need to, it's there, but you don't need to introduce a counter term for it. Okay. It's when you integrate over it. It's not dangerous. You don't have to take into account in renormalization. Because this is and we let lambda goes to infinity, or at least up to some high energy cutoff where the theory stops make sense. Now, in quantum field theory, hence high energy physics. Now, in statistical mechanics, where you have something like an Ising model that you have been, you have a theory which is defined on a lattice. Well, it can be just a mathematical lattice if you are dealing to a very simplified model like the Ising model, but if you are studying some real material, it's going to be the size of the mesh of the crystal. If you have a material, a magnetic material, or a superconductor, or anything, that would be the distance, average distance between the atoms in the lattice, which is usually a crystal, or even if it's not a crystal. If you are studying water, you have an average distance between the molecules of water. Okay, so you have a physical microscopic cutoff. So if you consider that this is a minimal distance, you can say that there is a cutoff which is basically pi over a, which is a high momentum cutoff. So this is fixed. Okay, and in when one studies, for instance, phase transition are points where the correlation length is very large for some reason, for physical reasons that physicists want and did understand. So, we have a case where we have a correlation length which turns out to be much larger than A. And we are interested, as a physicist, in understanding the universal property of what's going on at this scale. So we can define a scale mu, which is basically 1 over the correlation length. And this is known. That's a microscopic theory, or no, at least if it's not known, we want to. It's fixed up to some parameter. And we want to understand what's going on at large distance. And you have seen in statistical mechanics that the idea behind Wilsonian normalization is to integrate over the degrees of freedom, the fluctuations. So here you integrate over the thermal fluctuations, if you want, thermal or statistical fluctuations, to understand what's going on here. In quantum theory, you have a quantum theory which is defined by the functional integral. So you have quantum fluctuation in your functional integral. And what you want to do is you want to understand what's the contribution of quantum fluctuations here. But this is somehow the same picture. We're simply here. This is fixed. And we want to understand and master what's going on when the cutoff becomes larger and larger. Here, the cutoff is fixed. And you understand what's going on when you integrate over the fluctuations up to a scale and then up to a larger scale, et cetera, et cetera. But the mathematical feature is the same. You have two energy scale, one small, one large, and you want to find the formalism to take into account what's the effect of the here quantum fluctuation, here thermal fluctuation in between. Okay. So this is a general. That's why Wilsonian normalization is related to perturbative normalization. Well, at a very abstract level, viewed just from here, it's viewed from down to up, and here it's viewed from down to top to down. Okay. So that's just the words. So let me just introduce some more precise notation and formalism. So today I'm going to do some very abstract formalism. And formalism is not the right word because I'm not doing any math. I will give you rather a scenario of what's going on, and tomorrow we are going to make some explicit calculation. So I'm trying to do this by, for instance, defining. I start from a 5-4 theory, or a more general theory. Okay. Defined on a lattice. It can be defined on a lattice. And as lattice, I can take square lattice. That's on hypercubic. You know. So let me call this lattice capital lambda. It's not a good word. Let's call it L. Okay. And for instance, this lattice L is just Z. It's a cubic lattice, so it's the integer numbers to the power D with a mesh A. Okay, that's a unit, microscopic unit of length. That's what I described here. And so on this lattice, so the points here on the lattice, the x's are points, are a times vectors n on the lattice. So n is just integers n1 and d. That denotes the discrete position on the lattice. Vertex positions. And since I'm thinking for phi 4, I will assume that there is a theory where just there is a field, a scalar field phi of x, which is the same. So I'm not going to take Ising where the field is plus or minus 1, but I'm just going to take a scalar field, real continuous, so real variable, okay, which is associated to each point on the lattice. Okay. So, well, with those notation, I can just note the fact that to a vertex, let's call I, which is I1, IN, I associate a variable phi of I, which is just phi at the point x equal a times I. Okay. So at the point here, you have a phi. Okay. And so I want to think of this model as a discrete model for an Euclidean quantum field theory. I'm considering Euclidean quantum field theory. So, of course, I assume that there is an action. There is a classical action. So there is a discretized action. Okay, in my notes, I call it A of phi. So phi is just data of all the fields. So it's just a function. Phi is just the data of phi I for all I's belonging to Z, to the lattice ZD. Okay. Well, if you want to be rigorous, you should put, for instance, periodic boundary condition and deal with a finite lattice. But I'm not. But I'm not going to discuss that. So, A of phi, and just this action is very general. So I'm going to write this action as a discrete version of dd of x times some sum of our operators of x, operator alpha of the field phi times some kappa alpha, which means, in fact, that I'm going to write the action as a sum over the vertices of the lattice. Remember, the lattice is ZD. Then I have a sum over some indices alpha. I'm going to explain what this is. Some coupling constant and some discrete operator O alpha of the value of the field at the vertex E, and then of it may be a combination of the value of the field and then of the discrete, finite difference operator, finite derivative in direction nu of phi at point I. And this may involve higher derivative. So this is some function, in fact, a polynomial, some monomial in those variables. This is the value of the field of phi at I. This is the finite difference. We want the derivative or derivative in direction mu, etc. Okay? And these are just numbers, which are the coupling constant or the parameter. Of the model. Okay? And this is a microscopic action, or often it's called an Hamiltonian because it's an energy function. Okay? Okay, so that's quite abstract. So let me just give an example, it's a very simple example. Which, in fact, we already constructed. If I'm interested into, so this is my third operator. If I am interested in the phi-4 theory on a lattice, I have to consider three operators. First, the operator. So let's say I have an operator O1, which is of phi, which is just, well, I have an operator O0, which is the identity. An operator O1 of phi I, which is just the value of the phi field at the vertex I. I have an operator O2. Of phi I, which is phi I squared, the square of the operator. I can have an operator O3, which is phi I, which is phi I cube, but this is usually interest. There is, of course, O4, which is of phi I, which is phi I to the power 4. And I consider the operator involving derivative, which is, let's call O, well, let me call it O, O5. Well, these are not notation I've been written here, so that's O5, which is sum over mu of d mu phi I squared. Which is, if you want to be precise, this is I. Remember, I is a vector, which means I1 up to ID. So this is just sum from mu equal 1 to d of phi of I, phi I plus the unit vector u in the direction mu, so it's 0, 0, 1, 0, where this is a mu component. So it's a difference between phi I, so it's the discrete derivative in the direction mu on the lattice. This is mu, this is u mu, so it's a difference between this and this, squared. Yeah, and if you keep this term only in the action, this term and this term, of course, well, up to factor A, well, there are factor A, etc., what you get is just the discretized version of the phi-4 theory. If you take that the action is a sum of a sum over I of O2 plus with some coefficient K2 plus K4 O4 plus K5 O5. This is just a discretized phi-4 theory. And K2 is related to the mass squared, K4 is related to the coupling constant of the phi-4 theory. I'm not writing the normalization, but you have to. And the coefficient of K5, usually you normalize it to, let's say, 1 by normalization of the field. Okay. Phi, okay. See? So So we can construct a discretized action on the lattice. It's just a sum of local monomials in the field and its derivative. But you can construct a lot of them. Okay? And then, of course, we are doing either functional integration on discrete theory for constructing a quantum Euclidean theory, or we are doing statistical mechanics. So we are constructing a partition function, Z. We are constructing a partition function, or if you prefer, a functional integral, by Z, which is just the integral products over all the sides of the lattice, d phi I exponential of minus my action, A of phi. Okay. So this is a regularized functional integral. Okay? There is another, maybe I should explain that a bit. Yeah? So this is a regularization in a real space. So okay. Something that we are going to use tomorrow is a regularization in momentum space, which is well, another way. Or maybe I'll, okay, well, maybe, so that's a regularization in. So another way to use this is to regularize in momentum space by starting from the naive functional integral for phi to the 4 or for any theory in the continuum. So we start from a functional integral. It's going to be integral exponential of minus the action over the field. The field a priori is defined in a continuous space, so phi of x. But instead of using phi of x, you can use its Fourier transform. So you can write phi of x as integral d dk momentum divided by 2 pi to the power d e I k times x. Those are vectors times phi hat of k. And you can introduce a cutoff, namely a maximal distance, by simply cutting out high energy mode. So we cut out, we chop off, if you want, we chop off the modes such that k are larger than lambda. So we integrate over the momentum k so that k is less than lambda. Okay. So we integrate in this functional integral in all the modes of phi which are less than lambda. So we can write this as a k discretized at the scale lambda, phi lambda. Okay. So here we have a lattice. This is X space. Here we have in momentum space a ball. Momentum space. We have a ball or radius lambda, and the fields live there. Okay? And we are good. Okay, so it's a naive. Of course, you can formulate this as in K space by stating that the fields live in a Brillouin zone, pi over A minus pi over A, and that's a Brillouin zone. And here it's a bit simpler representation. Okay. Then you defined, in any case, you defined a partition function. This defines the partition function. And if you integrate over the lambdas, or only on those modes, you have a partition function that depends on the cutoff. And here also, you have a partition function that depends on the regularization. So it depends on the cutoff A here. Okay. Okay. So now, what is this Wilsonian renormalization procedure, which consists in starting from there and trying to understand what's going on here? So as you have seen in statistical mechanics, renormalization consists in three steps. Steps one. Integrate, in the sense that I'm going to define, over high energy or short distance fluctuations by what is called the decimation or block spin decimation or block spin or averaging procedure. This is the first step. I'm going to describe what it is. Second step, two. Out of this procedure, defines an average field that I'm going to call phi tilde and an average action, which I'm going to call A effective of phi tilde, average or effective action. It's not exactly the effective action I deal to, quantum effective action, but it's somehow averaged or effective action. Step three, rescale the distances, the momenta and the field to get a renormalized field phi renormalized and a renormalized action A renormalized. And step four, back there, four step, then compare. Then go back to step one and compare whether it's very different. Okay, so that's something very abstract, but so let me give an explicit example. Explicit example, but no calculation. Okay, I start from my lattice here. Original lattice. Okay. For step one, and I consider that I separate my lattice in blocks. Okay. So I consider that I have blocks that I'm calling B of size. What's the normalization? A factor B. So here, B equal 2, but you can take 3, 4. Okay. So this is a block B. B, and I defined, so on each vertex, there is a field phi I. And I defined an average field phi tilde in the block B. In block B, by just taking the average. So by taking that phi tilde B is just the sum over all the vertices inside the block. Vertices inside block B. I take the sum and I average by the number of sites in the block, which in this case is b to the power d. Okay. So this is the definition of the average field. Very, very simple definition. This is one. Okay. And now I want to express the physics in terms of, so now you see those blocks makes a larger lattice. And if the mesh here is A, here if the mesh is A, here the mesh is, I'm sorry, the mesh is a tilde equal B times A. New mesh. Here it was A. Okay. So I have a new lattice. Let's call it L tilde, which in this case has the same geometry, but simply the mesh is larger. And I'm asking, how can I define an effective action for those block variables? And that's very easy, because in fact, remember, the partition function, the ratio partition, you sum over all the phi with an exponential of the action. So consider, what is the contribution in this functional integral, which comes out from the configuration which has the same average? Okay, so you define here simply the exponential of the effective action for a field configuration phi tilde as the integral over all the vertices belonging to the lattice d phi I. And simply I'm going to enforce this constraint. So I integrate over all the field but one average on each block. So I introduce, for instance, products over the blocks belonging to the new lattice L tilde. I introduce a Dirac delta function of phi tilde of B minus 1 over B to the power D times sum over I belonging to B of phi I. So this is, you have one constraint per block, one constraint per block, and the effective A of phi. Okay. And this defines the effective action. For the block variables. Okay, so this was step two. So this is step one. We define okay. So we have defined our blocks here, step one. Here we have defined what is the average field and the average action. So this exists. It might be a very complicated function, but written like this, it exists. Okay, so that's step two. So we perform step one and step two. Okay, so now, so of course the complicated stuff is there. We have to compute that, and this requires a calculation, and often this requires approximation. Okay. So step three. We want to compare what we got with what we had originally. So you are almost done. Simply what we have to do is that we have to change the definition of distances so that the mesh becomes A again. So step three. Perform a space rescaling so define so here it defines distance, let's call it x prime, which is x divided by b, so that now I obtain let me draw it with a slightly different color. I have a lattice lambda prime which has a mesh A, and I get a lattice lambda prime, which is the same than the original lattice L, but with different variable. Okay? And therefore, in this lattice, I'm going just to, so this is a block here, this is a block B, and the block B, I'm going to relabel it just as a block is equal to a site I prime equal I prime 1 up to I prime d in ZD, which is the new lattice L prime. So I treat the blocks as the new sites of the new lattice. Okay, so the blocks are the new sites I prime, and I'll treat the field. I treat the field as new fields living on the new lattice. So I denote a new field phi prime. So I go from phi b, so phi tilde, to phi prime, a field living in lives on L prime. And here is a bit subtle, a point just a bit subtle, but very important. In order to do that, you have to rescale the field. Namely, what you have to do is that you define phi prime as b delta phi tilde is delta some scaling dimension of the field. I'm going to explain why you have to do that. So what does this mean? It means that if phi tilde takes some value in B, phi prime at the site I prime is just B tilde times phi tilde at the corresponding field block B. So this is a trivial rescaling, and this is a non-trivial part. And why is it necessary? Well, it's necessary because the field in general have dimension of length, we have seen. So when you rescale the length, you must rescale the fields accordingly. If you want to rescale things properly. And well, there are examples. For instance, okay, well, I'm going to, because, okay. Okay, so now you see that by this procedure, and if you do that, of course, you get a renormalized action A prime of phi prime by just stating that A prime of phi prime is just the same action than A effective of phi tilde. Okay. Because we have just made a change of variable, relabeling of the thing. So this is just the idea of how we define block variables. So it's a choice of procedure. This is averaging, so that's the hard part. And then we just relabel things, change the variables to re-express things in terms of a lattice which has the same mesh size to compare this with this. Okay. And it's only after this third step that we can compare the original action and the renormalized action A prime. Okay. So now, of course, this renormalized action, we expect that it can be written as a sum over local operators. But in general, the sum will involve more operators because it's more complicated. So this operator A prime, phi prime, is going to be expressed as a sum over the vertices I prime of the new lattice, a sum over alphas, a sum over all the possible operators, sum of the same operator, because we are on the same lattice, so we have this O alpha of phi prime. This means phi of I prime, I and the derivative, etc. The derivative mu of phi I prime, etc. But with new couplings, K prime alpha. New parameters which are renormalized. Okay? So, in fact, by this procedure, we change the original coupling into new couplings, which are effective renormalized couplings. Okay. And so this is the idea of a one-step renormalization. Okay. So now, we did this at one step. So the idea of Wilsonian normalization group is to iterate. What is this? Okay, I think I recall that. So now iterate. Thank you. this one-step renormalization. So iterate those renormalization. Transformation. So by iterating, of course, so if we iterate, let's call n times, we perform a rescaling. This amounts to rescaling by a factor s equal b to the power n. That's trivial. And we start from the action A. So we start from the field phi. We go to phi prime equal b. So, and let me write this. We get from phi x, we get the phi. We get to phi prime of x prime. Then we get to phi double prime of x double prime, which is b to the power delta times phi average. Write this, which is b to the power delta phi average of x, the original x block. And then we go to phi double prime of x double prime, which is b delta plus delta prime, the next one. Okay. Of phi, or phi tilde, well, double tilde of x. And we end up with a renormalized phi renormalized that's with n step of x n, which can be compared to the b delta plus delta 1 plus delta n minus 1. So this is a field renormalization at step 1, step 0, step 2, etc. Why?
Why would the scaling dimension?
I have not specified here whether I take the same scaling dimension for all values of the field or not. So a priori, delta might depend on the step and on the field. Well, usually not. In the simplest calculation, usually not. It's not a good time if it depends on the field, if it depends that it's a non-linear transformation. But it may depend on the kappa alphas. The coupling. In different points in coupling space, you may apply a different wave function renormalization. Okay. And so, well, this is just abstract nonsense in some sense, but you see that what you have been doing is that, so let me call this XS. So XS is, of course, x, the original x divided by the factor s. So this is a new distance. Because I have here x prime is x divided by b, so if I apply this t times, I get x divided by s with this important factor. Okay. And this phi n here, let me call this let me call phi n phi s. So let me call it phi s of xs. So it's a renormalized field. Okay. And let me call this factor here. Z of s. It's well, let me call with a z with a because it's not the action, it's a partition function. It's okay, this is field renormalization factor. It's just a product of the rescaling, the total rescaling you are doing on the field. Okay. And you see that what we are doing, that in fact, this procedure, I define it very formally as a procedure for all actions. See. So in the space of actions, I start from a point in the space of action, which is characterized by A. I go to A prime, I go to A double prime, and after some step, I end up at a point where I have an action A S. And the action AS is just the action after rescaling by S. Okay? Or if you prefer, in a coupling space, because of course those coupling kappa alpha are just, you know, coordinates in the space of couplings. I start from a point characterized by some kappa zero, so original coupling. I go to kappa one, which are the, and I end up with kappa s, kappa n, which is kappa s. So I go from original microscopic couplings, kappa, let's call that kappa zero, to kappa s. So this is a set of coupling, which are the normalized couplings, okay? So AS is a renormalized action. And kappa S are the sets of renormalized couplings. Okay. Okay, so this is a general feature. Of course, I've not done any calculation, so you could argue, but no, this is too complicated, or this doesn't make sense, but let's assume it makes sense. It does make sense for that's what. Okay. Then, of course, in doing that, we have not done anything when computing the original partition function. We just, instead of integrating over all the fluctuation of the field, we have, you know, we did it in steps. We did it by first integrating within each block, and then within each blocks of blocks, and then within each blocks of blocks and blocks of blocks. And so we have not changed the physics. If we are able to do that exactly, we have not changed the physics. So we expect that and that's an important point. If we start from a, you know, we start from a lattice with original mesh A. And consider, for instance, the correlation functions for two points which are at distance. So this is a point x1 and this is a point x2 on the lattice L, the original lattice. Okay? And it's quite reasonable to assume that if I compute the correlation function between phi, the original field, phi, this one, at this point, and phi at this point, 2, computed with the original action A, let's assume that the correlation function doesn't change much if we choose the point here, or the point here, or the point here, or the point here. And that's true if the correlation length of the model is very large. So it's not true always, but it's true if the correlation length is large. Then, making the average, we expect that this is going to be compared with the action for when you perform this S randomization. You see, we have another lattice, but the lattice is smaller by factor S. The X's has been contracted. So you have X1 of S, which is X1 divided by S here, X2 of S, which is X2 divided by S. Okay, and if our assumption is correct, this should be the same than the expectation value of that's phi here of this field multiplied by this factor. So this should be the same as phi s of x1 of s, phi s of x2 of s, computed with the renormalized action A of s, and taking into account this renormalized factor z of s, which is the product of this, but divided, because so that should be z of s to the power minus 2. Okay, so that's at least if the correlation length is much larger than A. In fact, if the correlation length is of the order A at least. Okay. Because we have not changed the physics. We are just averaged in different steps. So there is a relation, a simple relation, between the correlation function of the original theory at large distance and the correlation function of the renormalized theory at distances rescaled by S. Or, if in other words, since X of S is x divided by s, if you multiply by s the distance in all the points, this is equivalent to phi of x x1, phi of x x2 for the theory with the original action equal z of s minus 2, phi of x1 phi of x2 for the action, renormalized action. And here I can omit the fact that the field phi e is a renormalized field because now it's just a dummy term. We integrate over it. So this means that there is a relation between correlation function in the microscopic action and correlation function is a renormalized action, but the relation is by a change of distances. Okay, so you see that large distances in microscopic theory equal, you know, distances over the one in the normalized theory. So, if we know how renormalization works, computing the large distance property of, in a theory which might be very complicated because you might have infrared divergence, amounts to computing in a new theory correlation function at finite distance, which is something which is simpler. Okay, so I'll stop there. And tomorrow, we are going to do some, I'll present some explicit calculation for the Phi-4 theory, or generalization of Phi-4 theory, using this, what is it? This regularization in momentum space instead of a regularization of in position space, because calculations are simpler. And we'll see explicitly the connection between what we obtain by this procedure of renormalization, in particular what we get for renormalization group equation, with what we did in perturbation theory at one loop for phi to the 4. Okay, so but that's already.